Blog Talk Radio.
What's the topic? We'll never run out of options. Fatherhood to justice, O'Shea and Mark drop the knowledge. These are times where we try for a peace of mind, organize and then reignite with these words from the other side.
We're two good brothers, unpacked. Meaningful conversations centered in solutions that transmute the systemic energy of being black in America, where each episode is packed with inspirational messages and thought-provoking special guests. Come join us on the other side.
You're listening to E-Water Radio, K-E-W-R-D-B.
The views and comments expressed do not reflect the opinions of E-Water Radio. All comments and views are show guest views and comments and in no way reflect views or comments of E-Water Radio, KEWR-DB, or its affiliates.
Welcome back. We are in 2022. For all of those who fell asleep under some enchanted spell and just woke up, we are in 2022, and this is our first broadcast back with On the Other Side. And I have to ask, do I have my partner in knowledge with me, Brother O'Shea Luja? Are you with us on the other side, my brother?
Indeed, brother. I am here. I am on the other side with you. It's so good to be in 2022, brother. You're so good to be moving through this new year, brother.
It is, brother. It's a new year, brother, and it's which means new opportunities. I mean, every day should be a new opportunity, every moment, really. But there's something about the turning of the calendar from one year to the next that really inspired people to want to set out lists of change, man. But you know, my thinking, my philosophy is, brother, each moment should be an opportunity to make things different, change, to elevate from where you were the moment before. But especially on the new year, brother, we want to celebrate everyone who has set forth intentions of change and growth. We want to send light and energy to those brothers and sisters out there who are setting forth the course to elevate their lives, because elevation is what we really need right now. So if anyone is in that mindset, we celebrate you.
Yes. I'm so glad you said that, brother. We celebrate all of the people who are ascending, who are reaching, who are, excited to, take their lives to the next level, whatever that means to them. You know, it's called for celebration. And I feel that if enough of us celebrate, the people who don't feel like celebrating, they'll go to the next level by default.
Yes. The energy that's around them will pull them in that direction. There may be some resistance, but they'll find that eventually it's easier to not resist, brother, and just figure out what this whole elevation is all about and start participating. So we hold space for those brothers and sisters in that mindset. So we have an exciting show. We have a brother who's going to be joining us in a moment, Brother Jasir Franklin, also known as Makinju Ola. I hope I'm saying that right. He will correct me in a moment if I'm saying it incorrectly. But we're going to be talking about a very interesting topic. But before we jump into that, as always, we just want to hold space for our brothers and sisters out there who have moved on. And, you know, I just want to pay a particular attention to it was a tragedy in New York and the Bronx. 17 people lost their lives, children, family members, as a result of space heaters improperly functioning. Mm-hmm. And 17 people died in a horrific fire, brother. There's 4 people remaining in a hospital right now in critical care, including a baby. So we just want to hold space for the family and the friends. It's a tragedy, you know, just conditions that we shouldn't have to live under, surviving, mm-hmm. This wretched winter that occurs on the East Coast with space heaters. Our brothers and sisters should not have to live under those conditions and under those circumstances. So we want to send our prayers and our energy towards the surviving friends and family, because the loss of life is never easy to endure, especially when you lose children and under these tragic circumstances, brother. So we want to hold space for our brothers and sisters. 17 of them perished in that fire.
Yes, brother. Yes. Ashe, brother. Ashe for all the souls, brother. Thank you.
Then, you know, I just want to hold space, brother, for everyone really in this country who's enduring, in this world really, is enduring right now this new wave of COVID, this Omicron, and they have, they say, emerging variants, Deltacron, Flucron, just so many other possibilities that they're talking about. It has really created a tremendous amount of stress, death, uncertainty, and that's a lot that we're all under right now. So, I just want to hold space for everyone, really, man, who's going through this,
right.
Those in our communities, brother, who are suffering from, you know, economic scarcity, comorbidity issues, just really going through this has not been, you know, we were all hopeful that this would be a thing of the past when 2020 passed, brother, but we're moving into 2022 with, you know, with the same dynamic upon us on, you know, some of the circumstances change, of course, you know, there's different levels of suffering that we're enduring with it, but it's tough. And, you know, people are out there, they're confused, they're trying to get messages from different sources, trying to figure out who's right, who's wrong. CDC is making, you know, mandates and suggestions that are contradicting with some of the healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. And so it's a confusing time, brother. And, you know, I just want to just let everyone know that, you know, we over here at the other side, we understand, we're holding, you know, space and sending energy and light to ourselves and to you, because we are not outside of what's happening. So we just want to send energy, as much energy, and we want to receive as much energy so we can continue to thrive during this time.
Yes, very well said, brother. And it's interesting because on the other side, you know, the conception was out of the conversation of, you know, the lockdown in 2020. And who would have thought that over 2 years later, like, we'll still would be, you know, going backwards, actually, you know, into, you know, this energy of this pandemic. Like, we never would have thought, man. And we knew that it was a new normal that was happening. However, we couldn't not forecast it to this degree. And as you just stated, man, everybody who are moving through this with us, man, we do hold space and we do send light. And, you know, we reflect that energy as well. So we just give thanks, man, that we are all here on the other side. We are literally on the other side of this energy. Wow.
We literally are, brother. And so we just, you know, each time we're on, brother, we just want to hold space. We want to put information out there that, you know, educates, uplifts, you know, creates opportunity for people to hold on to something, to get them from one moment to the next. You know, so we are excited about each show. We're excited about this show, brother, because we're going to get into a conversation that is a necessary conversation. And we're going to bring on our brother Jasir Franklin, and we're going to get into the topic of healing from post-traumatic hood disorder. Now, we're going to have to figure out what that means, but before we do that, Brother Jasir Franklin, also known as Mike Njuola, are you with us on the other side, my brother? Brother Jasir.
Also known as Bobby Brown, the original member of New Edition.
There he is.
Brother, let me tell you something. I love those first few singles that you put out, brother, but then you kind of went on the deep end.
Right.
On the other side with some wisdom and knowledge.
Oh, man. What's good?
All
going, brother. Everybody? Peace. Thanks for having me, y'all.
Good to have you on the show, my brother. So before we jump into the topic, brother, before we get into post-traumatic hood disorder, let's just talk a little bit about you just here. What, tell us a little bit about you, brother. You are in a practice called IFA, which really guides, you know, you throughout the conversations that you have in the public. So let's just talk a little bit about that, brother, and maybe give a little explanation and a little background as we jump into this topic so people can understand from where you come with your conversation and your dialogue.
Well, I'm just a brother. I'm a brother from South Central Los Angeles, born and raised in the midst of all of that stuff. And I picked up a lot of habits and stuff from that environment that I thought was once normal until I came across, like you said, IFA. And I had to compare apples to apples. What IFA was teaching me versus what I had learned previously, you know, in my household or just growing up in the streets in L.A. And they didn't align.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to bump my head a few times with some issues, personal issues, marital issues, financial issues. Just my mindset was just different than what I was learning, and I was struggling with understanding why I couldn't get this concept. This is because the old framework that I was functioning under was becoming void, and it wasn't valid anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that those teachings really made me go into myself, which, again, after being initiated in 2018, a lot of things changed for me, and it sent me into the space of what we call NEFA, our ORI.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to clean out some stuff. I had to go in the garage and clean some stuff out that no longer served me any purposes. And when I got to the root of it, I figured out I had to let go of my previous mindset that I had learned in the hood, and I had to realize and recognize that this is actually like traumatic stuff that we go through in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It gets brushed off as normal. Like, it becomes like, this is normal to know that you lost a friend yesterday that you just played football with in the street due to a gang drive-by or something. You know what I mean? Like, that stuff became normal. To hear people go to jail for 25 years and just be okay with it. Like, that was normal. That stuff is traumatic.
It's traumatic, and it causes a lot of upheavals. And, you know, we're skating right on the outside of the topic, brother. But before we skate into it, you dropped a couple of terms. I just want to give people on the other side listening just an opportunity just to understand when you say IFA, just, you know, explain what that is, and then you dropped the term ORI. Just those two, because I think those are important for us to understand your orientation of thought. So first is, you know, explain to us the practice or the spiritual understanding, the spiritualness of IFA, and then ORI, because I think that's definitely important, because I know what it means, but I it's important, I believe, to this conversation. So first, just expound a little bit on IFA.
Yeah. Okay. Well, IFA is a Nigerian spiritual practice. It comes out of the Yoruba, out of Nigeria. Actually, IFA is the system that we practice with. Some people think IFA is like a deity or something, but it has a one deity wrapped up in it. But it's actually the system that we follow that was left to us by Orumila. It's a spiritual practice comprised of a bunch of different deities that helps human beings figure out their destiny and purpose in this life. And it comes with a process of what we call initiation, where you get initiated into IFA. And at this point, your destiny is revealed, and you kind of get more backdrops to how you should be moving through this lifetime that you came into this destiny with. Now, flipping the script to your second question, that destiny we're talking about is planted, IFA people believe, is planted in your ORI. And your ORI is your mind, inside your brain, your head. The one thing you cannot lose on your body is your head. You can lose a limb, an arm, a toe, a fingernail, but you can't lose your head, because that is where everything is. That's the engine that makes you work. And your destiny is planted inside of that. And the shell we call the body is playing it out in real time with you. But we believe Ifa plants, you made an agreement with Ifa, the system of Ifa, before you came here. It's planted into your re. And our job here is to figure out our destiny in real time in life.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, brother. And I think that's I'm going to use that as a segue into this conversation, because when we talk about the mind and we are talking about trauma that is mm-hmm. occurring to the mind, in this dynamic that you call post-traumatic hood disorder. So first thing I want to do is really just expound and expand on what that is. Because when I heard it, I immediately thought about Dr. Joy DeGruy's book, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. And she talks about the genetic issues of slavery encoded into our system, and we operate based upon things that we don't even, our ancestors have passed, the trauma our ancestors have passed down to us. But what we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about from a more immediate situation, mm-hmm. trauma within, mm-hmm. we perceive from being the part and living within the hood. So I'm not going to attempt to explain it, but I want you to break it down, and then we can go into the conversation. So let us expound on what post-traumatic hood disorder is all about, Brother Jasir.
Okay. I think it'll work better if I explain how I came up with it. Well,
sure.
During my transition, as I told you, as I came into Ifa about over 10 years ago, as I came into Ifa, I started understanding that the teachings that I'm getting are not matching up with what I've learned. And it was frustrating. So I went to get counseling for myself. I was from South Central. I had an anger problem and all that stuff. I can admit it now and laugh at it. But I had all those issues. And these are things that Ifa despises. Anger holds no value in Ifa. So I went to get had a therapy session. It lasted about maybe 3 weeks to I think it was about a month. And while I was explaining to this lady what I was experiencing, they ask you questions and it kind of draws out your past, things you've gone through. And as I'm laying this stuff out on the table, I just had to take an aerial view of it and was like, that stuff sounds crazy. Like, that stuff sounds very traumatic. If you put this in a different neighborhood, everybody needs therapy. But in our neighborhood, nobody needs it because it's normal. Mm-hmm. So as I was talking to her, I actually asked her, I said, isn't this kind of a form of trauma? And she said, yes, it really is. I said, somebody needs to make something called post-traumatic hood disorder, because when you leave the hood, that's the only time that you actually can begin to see some of it, because you develop concepts that are not real. You can't take with you everywhere. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
You can't take that aggression into your marriage when you become older and you want to have kids and start a family. You can't take Snoop Dogg's first record, Doggy Style, into that concept of being married. You have to change that. But we have a method that's kind of like it's okay to still do some of that stuff and then act like you're just this different person in this new life. I don't care if you're in a Fortune 500 corporation or you're the man working on the trash truck. If you came from the hood, you're taking that wherever you went.
Mm-hmm.
If you did not purge it, you're going to react to your bosses based upon what you feel is right versus what's actually right. And if you grew up in the hood, you totally learned life. You learned how to survive in that environment. And that environment process does not go out. It does not belong in every other environment you may find yourself in throughout life.
Mm-hmm.
Well said, brother. Well said. I do want to add that you know, when you say post-traumatic hood disorder, you know, could you speak to us about, you know, what I hear when I hear that is, you know, the lack of resources to treat this dis-ease, because it's actually a dis-ease that, you know, have everyone deficient in, you know, like other communities, they have different rescue envoys to come in and treats even soldiers that have been on war zones. So, you know, when I think of post-traumatic hood disorder growing up in Watts and, you know, growing up in the hood, you know, it was a war zone. So it was like no one never came in to teach us how to deal with the loss of life, you know, around us. So can you speak to us about that and, you know, like about what that means to you? Is it a disease or is it a lack of resources or what is it to you?
It's kind of both to me because disease is something that's just out of order. It's just not something right needs to be rearranged and back in alignment, and this order is kind of the same thing to me. You need to clean up your house, basically. But you, I mean, you're right. We didn't have this training. We didn't have people telling us because, again, like I said, it was normalized. It was by the people older than me. I'm just going to use myself. By the people older than me, it was normalized. By people my age, it was normalized. And people below me, it was normal. I'll give you an example. Let me give you an example. When I had my first son, I had a baby shower, and a friend of mine that I had known since probably kindergarten, he came to the baby shower, and then he came up to me. He said, "Welcome to the baby's daddy club, bro." I was like, "What?" He was like, "Welcome to the baby daddy club. I got two of them. Everybody go through it." I said, "So this is the norm. I'm supposed to be okay with being a baby daddy, not being a father and a husband. This is what's supposed to be norm. Like, why is that okay for us? Because this whole post-traumatic hood disorder is not just gang violence. This is a concept that we walk around with, that things are not normal. That when I started doing this work, I started studying different countries, and I discovered like places like India has a less than 1% divorce rate. In America, we have above 50%, and in African Americans, we have our women filing for divorces at 70%. Women filing for divorces. Why is this baby daddy? Why are we having baby showers before we have a bridal shower? That's a disorder. That's a dis-ease, as Brother O'Shea says, and it's a disorder at the same time. Something is out of alignment. And to me, it's just the way that we have accepted it. We make songs about it. People go platinum behind these concepts.
I'm glad that you brought out, Brother, that it's not just about gang violence. You know, because when most people hear the think all our problems are sort of somehow couched in just that experience. But what I'm hearing from you and the question that O'Shea brought out, that it's more than just issues that result from, you know, the gangs that may exist. You know, it is a way of life, if I'm hearing it correctly, it's a way of life that we have based upon this experience living in the hood. And yes, I do agree, O'Shea. It does stem from a lack of proper resources, and I agree with you, Jasir, that it is, you know, things are out of order. It is a disorder of things, odds, and you know, you're right. If you live under it long enough, as I'm hearing you saying, if you live under these conditions long enough, even without you knowing, until you step out of that dynamic, you have been in traumatic conditions, and it's a beautiful, it's actually a beautiful term, brother, because it's one that it stops you in your tracks, and it forces you, you know, it forces you to think, you know, am I suffering from this? You know, to what degree? Even if I didn't live in the hood, right? You still have family members that you saw every day that you had to participate in their lifestyle in some way. Even if you lived in Beverly Hills and they lived in the worst part of whatever city across America, you still had, if you had a lot of contact and a lot of participation with them, you were still affected by it. affected by feeling bad for them, affected by having to normalize their lifestyle. So, so I would say, damn, every person, every person in this country is suffering from that, brother, or has suffered from it to some degree.
Like I said, because you grew up in the hood, you. What did Tupac say? Every brother in L.A. got a little bit of thug in him. you grew up in any neighborhood, I don't care where it is, in Brooklyn, Bronx, Buckhead, whatever it is. If you grew up in any kind of hood, if you're still there, you're definitely dealing with it. And if you left, you're still dealing with it. Because it's not normal the way that we are trained in this environment.
So what are some of the symptoms, brother? If someone is suffering that, how can one identify that they are, you know, that they suffer under this traumatic experience? What were some of the things, if you were diagnosing this as a person who is getting into this, you know, what are some of the things that people would, you touched on it a little bit, but let's expound on that, brother. What are some of the things people can say, I can identify that as a post-traumatic hood disorder symptom or something that this person has that, if you will. I'm trying to use the right language without sounding like too much into like this Western psychology thing. I don't want to, you know, couch it in there because they haven't dealt with this, brother, and they don't have proper treatment, but for lack of a better word, brother, what are some of the things people should look for to say, oh, wow, you know, I need to check myself because I think I'm suffering under this or I'm enduring under this sort of traumatic situation?
Well, the first thing I would always say is do some ORI work. And remember, the ORI is the mind, right? And I heard this a while back, but my brother O'Shea brought it back to my attention a couple of weeks ago. Do some homework on yourself. Check your patterns in your life. Talk to some of your family members. And he probably believe there's three methods of figuring out what's going on with your life, either good or bad. And the method is first, dig into your own mind. Secondly, go to the people around you, your wife, your husband, your mother, your father, your cousin, your sister, people that actually know you, your BFFs, whoever been around you enough to be able to tell you the truth of how you are behaving. What is your character like?
Mm-hmm.
And once you discover where that character is, be it left or right, and left is the good side because I'm left-handed, okay? So left or right. If you're on the right in this scenario, trace it back to the root. And again, if you grew up in any of these environments, there's things that are going to be just blatantly on the surface that anybody can see, such as anger, such as the way you treat women, such as the way you approach finances and money, such as the way you approach the idea of having children and raising them.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things are things that everybody desires and will deal with in life. But the thing is, how are you achieving it? And if it comes with some bumps in the road, let's say you've heard that you're angry or you have an attitude problem or you have a quick fuse, I guarantee you can trace that back to the neighborhood where you have to survive with that. If you're always chasing quick money and everything's about the dollar bill for you, that's a survival tactic that we learn in the hood because you're in survival mode in the hood. If you have, and I'm not talking about anybody when I say this next one. I don't want anybody to take this one personal because I have two of them, but that was me from my old mentality. But if you have multiple baby mamas, then how are you choosing women? And what is your thought process to procreation? Because these things here that I'm describing are normal, where we come from.
But the question is, where are you going? And if you're going somewhere that the hood can't go, this is how you identify them. I have to do the same thing. I have to do some of that homework. I have to talk to people. I have to talk to exes. I called up exes before and just talked to them and said, hey, what was the problem? What you feeling? And it was all unanimous. Every person I spoke to had a unanimous response.
Such good stuff, brother. Good stuff. Mark, I wanted to, man, I wanted to jump in on one thing to just touch on a few points just here that you just made. One, when you were speaking on, you know, in terms of bringing things into a relationship and bringing, you know, it was a lot of things that was from a masculine perspective. But I do think it's important for when we're talking about PDHD, you know, it doesn't have a gender. Like, it could be masculine and feminine, right? Because there's a lot of sisters that's growing up in the hood that could have it too. Am I correct as it relates to what you define it as?
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, the sisters are the ones having the babies, right? So everybody's choosing. They're basically choosing based upon exterior, fictitious, artificial things. No one's choosing. I have never particularly had a conversation with, maybe you guys have, but I haven't. But I have never had a conversation with a woman or a man that was telling me about someone they had began to date before the children have come along and describe that person based around their character. Everything has been superficial and artificial from the outside. What she looks like from the man, or what he makes and what he where he lives and what he drives for the woman. But nothing to do with who he is to his core and his soul.
That's good. That's good, brother. That's good stuff.
Yeah, no, it really is, brother. And I think it's rich. When you talked about the characteristics, man, anger, how we treat our women, how women treat themselves, approach to finances and money, our relationship with finances and money, it's a very sick relationship that most people in the hood have, brother. We get it, we spend it, we don't invest it, we don't save it. And a lot of that is because, you know, there's a lack of that flowing around, but a lot of the times it is also the fact that we don't do it because we haven't been put in an orientation to do it. Approach to children and family, you know. I'm not going to put out that everybody who lives in the quote-unquote hood doesn't have proper relationship with their children and family, but there is a suffering in that area, and we see that as a result of a lot of divorcing, a lot of single parents, a lot of disruption between men and women with children. Courts, we see that. And then when you said the idea of survival mode, in survival mode, and if there had to be one characteristic that, you know, really, that characteristic really stood out to me, brother, because I think when you're in survival mode, all of these other things are almost impossible really for you to have a high-minded sort of focus on, right? Because if you're in survival mode, it's impossible to focus on having a proper relationship with your family because you're only thinking about just getting the basics for them. You're not really thinking about the edification and the upliftment of them, right? You're not really thinking about financing in terms of saving, investing, bitcoins, you know, stocks. All of that is just – that's not even a thought, because what you're thinking about is, where am I going to get the next few dollars to either eat for myself or to feed my family or my children? That's a survival mode. There's no when you're in a survival mode, there's no creative thought going on.
Right. You know? That's it. Yes. There's no creative thought going on.
So, brother, let's bring this now to, you know, a point where we recognize that this trauma exists. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. It's existed for years, and it's something that is current. Let's talk about how do we get to the other side of this trauma, but what does that look like? How do we begin as a community, as Brother O'Shea would say, a beautiful ebony people? How do we emerge on the other side of this trauma? What are some of the steps we need to take?
Mark, you always come up with the great questions.
Right.
That boy keep you on your P's and Q's, don't he? The thing, I was just about to add this too. The thing is this. I don't know about you, but I've never had a class. I've never had an uncle or aunt or anybody be able to explain to me how the mind works. Because the answer to this whole thing, number one to me, is always going to be accountability. If we identify, like I said before, what the issues are, we have to then be accountable. There's a big difference between telling the truth and being honest. So first, truthfully, we got to figure out what it is and say, yes, I do have that. But the truthful part kicks, I mean, the honesty part kicks in when it's time to actually make the change, to do something about it, what you just identified truthfully. And that comes with accountability, too. Now, when you are accountable, though, your brain is still going to struggle with your newfound idea of being accountable to things it's been trained to do for 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. So if we don't, as a people, begin to get into psychology, therapy, and most importantly, this thing that's sitting on everyone's head called your own mind and how it functions and works, it's going to be a seesaw, a tug-of-war struggle with changing that, even if you're so-called accountable, because there's two different ways that we decide and make decisions. And just like what you were talking about, Mark, when you're stressed out and you're in survival mode, that's called stress, basically. So if your mind is stressed out, here's the thing. You have two places that you make decisions from, logically from your mind and emotionally from your gut. So if you're stressed out all the time, and living in the hood is a 24-hour stressful job, you worried about money, you worried about somebody want to jack you, you worried about getting on the bus, you worried about making it home, you worried about what you're going to eat, you worried about if everybody's okay. You got all these stressful things living in the hood. You're constantly bombarded with this. So if you're stressed, how the mind works is, if you're stressed, it shuts down logic and reason. And that's why if you step on someone's Jordans in the neighborhood, like on, what was that, Jungle Fever? If you step on someone's Jordan in the neighborhood, they're just ready to fight you because they're not functioning from a logical perspective. He just spent $150 on these shoes that he did not have just to impress somebody he does not know, because that's the psychology to live where he lives. So it's constantly that stress, right?
Yes, yes.
If you don't get to understand how your mind works, accountability will help you, but it won't be the saving grace. Because at the end of the day, we have to reprogram what they call these neurons that sends the messages that makes your body react. And you can reprogram those things by repeating things that are in opposition to things you used to do. But you have to get through that process, and it's going to be a complete struggle because the brain does not want to let go at times. But you have to force feed it daily. So, for instance, if somebody steps on your Jordans, you may feel anger build up because that's what your mind is used to you doing. But you have to take that moment and make a different choice. And the more you make different choices, the more you reprogram the responses in your mind.
Well said, brother.
That's well. That's beautiful. Because, you know, when you think about it, we talk about the problem, solving the problem. The problem's in your mind, but you have to use your mind to solve the problem, right?
So, exactly.
So it does take training, brother. It does take patience, and you know it does take, you know, creating an atmosphere around you. If I'm thinking about this, where you have to create conditions of change, and you have to put things in front of you to reinforce that, right? And some people think, well, how can I do that if I'm living in the situation? If I'm in the hood, how can I de-stress? How can I de-traumatize myself if I'm in the hood? But, of course, you can. And actually, you should, right? Because if you think about doing it and leaving the hood, then once you do it, you take yourself out of the dynamic where you can help people. But to actually – people actually see you going through that change while you're in this water, right, while you're in this water, but you've insulated yourself with scuba gear, right, secure underwater breathing apparatus. You have put something around you that has created a condition that your mind now can begin to move out of that trauma, brother. And I read a book by Bell Hooks. She said, how does that start? How do we make change? And it starts with little things. It starts with conversations like this, right? It starts with accountability partners. If you say you're going to do something, then you have to put yourself in O'Shea and Jasir, you can, you know, tell me if you think I'm on the right track with this thought, especially you, Jasir. Well, you have to have people around you that are helping you with this. You have to have a supportive community, and that doesn't mean leaving the hood to find that. What do you think about that, Jasir? You have to leave the hood to heal from this traumatic disorder?
Man, hello? I could jump in there to just add on to what Mark is asking you, Jasir. Brother Jasir, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, bro.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I wanted to jump in and just say, you know, the something when Mark had opened up this question he had led in with, you know, a book from Bell Hooks, and it's interesting, you know, 30 years ago it would say, you know, read a book, you know, but this generation, you know, to get them to read, that's a whole nother conversation. You know, I know they like to receive a lot of their information through podcasts, so no pun intended, but on the other side is, you know, something that can seep right to their, you know, their mental stimuli. But I did want to add that, you know, there's so many books to overwrite, you know, the programs. You know, The Power of Habit Building is one of the books that I love. Also, you know, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. You know, it just, it goes on and on and on. Self-Discipline by Brian Tracy, you know, Rewire, Change Your Brain, you know, that's another great book. So I'm only saying these books because I do feel that, as Mark said, we need to baby step our way, and especially this younger and older generation, into reprogramming ourselves. And, you know, just to stretch this question out, what do you feel, Jasir, that, you know, this TikTok or new age social media generation, man, how can we, you know, move them into building habits? Because that's what we're talking about, the power of habit building, positive habits.
Yes.
I mean, meet them where they are, I would say, because there's a whole lot of good information on YouTube, maybe not on TikTok so much, but YouTube and stuff like
Unless
that of good people.
Silly dads, brother, but other than that.
I couldn't hear you.
Then unless you want to learn how to dance with silly dads, my brother.
Are you talking about TikTok? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Man,
but
y'all
yeah,
acting like y'all outdated, brothers. Y'all know I just have to jump in. TikTok have a whole not that I personally engage in it a lot, but it has a whole lot of great information. It's just like with any social site, whatever you engage in and click on, the algorithm will send you more of that. So it's very important that we know, because all of us are a lot older than maybe a lot of people that's on TikTok. However, it's not just a dumbed-down version of social media. It's real powerful if we are controlling the algorithms and not letting it control us.
Beautiful. Beautifully said, brother.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I do understand that TikTok is like a bite-sized snippet of information. It's not extensive,
yeah.
But I know that YouTube, they have like two-hour lectures on these things. And different
yes.
people like Sadhguru, people like that, that gives very good information about
yes.
the mind and changing the mind. So I would meet them where they are. If there's people on TikTok, then first you got to get them interested in that, though. They got to be interested in wanting to get this information.
Yes.
And that can be a whole nother situation to deal with. But that's the question. How do you get them interested in wanting to understand this? But this is, again, what I'm attempting to do here is kind of like, I want to say groundbreaking, because I really hadn't heard it put in this particular way to people. Like, I'm writing the book that I told you guys about, and I'm writing it based upon the perspective of me actually being that person behind somewhat enemy lines, growing up in South Central, but not being of that way mentally. Like, I never liked it. I never agreed with it. But if I had came out with this concept 30 years ago, I would have got rolled over on and nobody would have listened to me, because that wasn't the way of life then. And this day and time, these kids have so much at their fingertips, though. Like you said, TikTok and all those things. But the thing is, how do we get their attention? But I think a lot of them are burnt out on the way of life that we had. It's a lot of them burnt out on it. And so I deal with kids, too, in my teachings of ORE&E. And I hear how they speak and what they're thinking. And they're tired of it, too. They just don't know what to do. They can't get it from their parents because their parents don't know. So they're like, where do I get it from? Meet them where they are is my answer.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
And I think that's a beautiful answer. When I used to attend the mosque in New York under Louis Farrakhan, you know, some brothers would ask, you know, some of the leadership, well, shouldn't we have the brothers come in dressed up? You know, that's respectful. And they would repeat what the minister said. Just let the brothers come as they are. If you began to try to change them before the conversation starts, before you even had a chance to learn who they are, what they are, from whence they came, their orientation of thought, how they got there, if you try to put things in front of them just to change, it becomes like you're a social worker. And you are saying, here's the formula for your life, as opposed to saying, you know, this is what I'm experiencing from you, and here's how I want to partner with you to have this change experience with you, right? Because I am you. So when you change, I change. And when I change, hopefully you change. So let's do this together. If you don't, I agree, Brother Jasir, if you don't meet them where they are, if you try to automatically change them without experiencing them, then you're going to lose them. The conversation is going to end very quickly because they're going to be like, who is this guy? Why does he think he's better than me? As opposed to, this brother is me. And that's a very different approach.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you try to shove a book in their face.
Oh, right. Once you've experienced this change, once you know what's on the other side, you want to rush your people to get there, and it's hard to see them in certain conditions. It's like you try to rush them. So it's frustrating, but it requires patience on those brothers who are actively doing this work, like yourself, Brother Jasir, and myself, and Brother O'Shea.
Shizzle. I was going to say that if you try to shove a book in their face, they're going to turn away from it because their generation is quick, and it's on those social platforms. So that's why I'm saying, the book worked for us because that's how we were taught. That was knowledge to us. They don't get their knowledge from there too much.
Right.
So majority of them. So we got to meet them where they are. But luckily, the beauty of it is at their fingertips. At any moment, you can be in a conversation with them right now, right in front of you, and pull it up and show it to them, and there's nothing they can do about it. You don't got to go to a library. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's immediate.
We have to use all the tools at our disposal, brother. We can't throw anything away. Like Brother O'Shea said, we can't throw TikTok away. We can't throw Instagram away, Facebook, YouTube, because everything currently and historically can be found on these different social media platforms.
Yes.
This is so true, brother. So, brother, let me ask you this, Brother Jasir. As you're doing this work, brother, what are some of the challenges and some of the joys that you've experienced? Let's start with some of the challenges that you've experienced, you know, as you dive into this subject matter with our brothers and sisters, and what are some of the joys that you've experienced?
They kind of are equal. The challenges are when you present them with this information and they want to hold on to the old ways still. I call it
I call it, they need to have like a, what I call like a narrative reconciliation party, basically. Like, people have narratives in their minds that keeps this dysfunction alive.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, it's kind of like the whole Black Power thing, right? Everybody thinks that in the Black Power fight that the white man is white supremacy. But as long as you put that white supremacy title on them, you're putting somebody above you anyway, which cancels out Black Power.
Yes,
if you keep that mentality, it doesn't allow you to go do what's sent here to do by a God that's bigger than any human being, white, black, brown, red, or yellow on this planet. So, but when you say that to some people, I'm just giving you an example. I'm not saying that's it, but that's an example. That people have narratives that play in their head that keeps them motivated to stay there. So when you present it to them, the first thing they do is start replaying these narratives in their head. And sometimes it comes out at you. I'm like, so if you believe that, if you actually believe what you're saying, are you listening to what you're saying first? Now, tell me how what you're saying helps you to change. Does it help you change or help you stay the same?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I told myself some of the same narratives before. Like, I had a couple of them for myself. But the minute I chose to let go of those narratives and start telling myself, for instance, I'll give y'all some serious deep-rooted dirt on myself. When I was going through my changes, I always didn't think I was enough to do the things I wanted to do because of how I was raised in the streets and raised in my household. So inside of me or outside of me, everybody thought, oh, I had it together. Or I was a go-getter, so to speak. But inside of me was terrified. So I would always tell myself, I would always put other people before me. That was my narrative to me. I would say that he's dope or she's good at that, but I would never put myself in that same conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me to say, hey, you are enough when I started making my changes, right? You are enough. So now I don't really speak. I'll give people their props, but I'm not going to do like I used to do to where I would do it as a deflection. Because it took the light off of me not doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing for a lot of other people. Like, people have different scars and traumas and things to heal. But I'm sure they have a narrative that keeps that song, keep the party going. They got a song that scratched, that keeps playing, that keeps playing, that keeps them on the dance floor. And they on the dance floor all by themselves. Until they change the record, it's not going to be a party for no one but them.
Yes. Yes. Change is hard, brother. It's easier to hold on, to cling to things that give us comfort and give us peace. You know, cling to old, outdated philosophical ideas.
Exactly.
Lessons learned in the hood, you know, poor relationship habits. But because change is difficult, because what's on the other side of change? It's the unknown. And a lot of people are scared of the unknown, brother. So I think what I'm hearing you say is it's the challenge of the resistance. But just in a few minutes that we have, brother, talk about the joy. Talk about some of the joy that you experience with this work, brother. We always want to leave our people with joy, man.
Exactly. It's all about the joy, right? The good stuff is that the people who actually make it to the other side, you see them changing. You see them actually accountable. You talk to them and they correct it. Actually, I want to give my brother Food some credit for something. I mean, O'Shea, some credit for something here. Because O'Shea, I don't know if you noticed or not, but you helped me with something before. Is he still there, O'Shea? Oh.
Yes, okay. Yes, brother. I'm here, brother.
Oh. Okay, so... The good part is that when you say something to somebody and you let them know where it is and then you actually see them correcting it. I remember when I first met O'Shea, it was kind of like a different meeting. And
I think as he got to know me, he saw that my PTHD was on probably volume 10.
But he kindly let me know that's not where he was, and I can see how he moved around that energy. He never just like said it to me like, dude, get away from me with that, but he just like, you know, kind of moved around it.
Wow.
But and I noticed it. So the joy of that is that I don't know how he feels now, but we haven't even had that conversation. But now that I know that I'm moving in a different energy, I can see his responses to me different. And
yes,
that's how I look at my people that I'm teaching as they go through my classes. Because with Ori and Nee, we got about 4 classes we take them to. We have Ori coaching that we put them through. But as we see them working, sometimes you got to give them that loving cold shoulder and let them know what it is and let them sit with it, because guess what? It's not really your issue. It's their issue. But the only thing you can do is let them know that it exists. They have to pay attention to it.
Right.
If they're accountable, right? So, but as you see them grow, it is something that makes you feel good. I got probably about 100 students, but about out of the 100 students that we've had in the last year, it's been about a good core, 23, 25 of them, that stay grounded with this work. And when you see them latch on to it, it's like it's the best feeling ever, because you can actually see people, you're actually making a difference in these people's life that they didn't have this access to before.
Yes, yes, and that's beautiful. And you think about, when you say 25, you think about each one of them having 25, 30, 40 people that they are in contact with. And then those people go on, and then that continue to expand. So the work that you do, brother, is beautiful. And in this last couple of minutes, brother, I just want to know, how can people contact you, brother, so they can get some healing from this post-traumatic
healing. And Mark, man, I want to say one thing briefly, man. I got a confession. I'm just here, man. I've been sitting back on this particular On the Other Side, you know, just listening to my brother's build and smiling from ear to ear, man. Just here, brother. Just, you know, your response to the questions, your disposition, you know, to everything, man. I'm sitting back just smiling, man, like a smiling, happy big brother, brother. You are, you're moving in an energy of light, man, and it's a wonderful thing to see. So I just had to say that, because I haven't said a lot, because I'm just sitting back quiet and just excited, brother, for, you know, where you moving to. So I give thanks for you, brother.
Gratitude, brother. Much gratitude. I appreciate it.
I'll shizzle to that.
So where can we find you, brother? Where can people come and check one of your classes out or something?
Oh, it's real simple. Oriandnee.com, Oriandnee.com. That's the main hub. But, of course, same thing on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all that stuff.
Well, brother, we have the link here up. We're gonna put this on our social media platforms. We're going to put it on the Apple Podcast, Spotify, and other platforms, and your link to your website will be there, brother. We appreciate you, Brother Jasir. We are, you know, excited about this topic that you're having, because it's a necessary one. We're going to be following it. We're going to be looking for that book, and we're going to light and energy, brother, so you can continue this beautiful work that you're doing. And we want to thank everyone who joined us on this very important topic and this very special day. We want to thank you, Brother Jasir. We definitely want to have you back so we can continue this messy energy. We're going to talk about why I said that the next time you come back. And we love you. We love everyone out there. We will see you next time on the other side.
Indeed.
Peace.